This is The Agenda from News Radio 560, KPQ, and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern are open for discussion.
All righty, joining us today in the second half hour, we're going to talk about the short-term vacation rentals. The county commissioners have begun a process to regulate, and we're going to talk with a couple of folks from the Short-Term Rental Alliance that have some concerns about that. Sharon Lynn and Zelda Holgate join us coming up in a few minutes, but right now, always a popular guest on the program, Dr. Brad Cromar joins us. Doctor, thanks for being here today.
Glad to be here.
Well, I've got your report. We get these sent out, and right now I see the grasses and the weed pollens aren't a problem yet, considered low, but right now it's the tree pollens giving folks fits.
That's what happens. Allergies are seasonal. And so from about March until June, we have tree pollens. I'm surprised we don't have a little more grass, but that varies as well, and we should be full onto grass here pretty soon. And so, some days are probably higher than others.
So do people mistake things as being allergies that aren't, and do we have allergies to things that we aren't even aware of?
Well, allergies generally are the most common allergies are pollen and animal danders for most people. About 25% of people have what we'd call seasonal rhinitis or hay fever, allergic rhinitis, there's many terms for it. About 5% of people have food allergies. Nuts, fish, shellfish are common in adults and children. Sometimes egg and peanut and wheat can be more problematic than milk. And then some people have venom allergies and some people have medication allergies.
Is this something that we just, so many of us just tend to just kind of put up with and never truly get properly diagnosed?
Well, many people with 25% of the population having seasonal allergies, there's a lot of people who are putting up with symptoms. There's a lot of good treatments out there, and a lot are available over-the-counter, so many people are getting better relief than they have in the past. But there's a lot of good ways we can help people as well.
Well, been noticing I've been having a little tickle in my throat lately, I know they're diagnosing things without seeing it with a proper exam is never inappropriate. But what can you tell our listeners people for general signs to look at to recognize might be worth contacting their doctor to look into signs of allergy?
Well, I think that in the spring, summer, and fall, when you have pollens are blowing around, then people have sneezing, runny nose, water, itchy eyes, a lot of drainage down the back of the throat, itchy throats, cough, itchy ears. It almost mimics cold, but colds are more viruses, and viruses occur more in the fall and wintertime. So if you have that springtime, summer symptoms that you think are colds a lot, that's often allergies. Some of the symptoms are quite similar, but the itching is more common with allergies and less common with a cold.
Are we developing more allergies? Are we born with these? I mean, what are there myths out there about allergies? Are they getting worse? What's the truth there?
Well, it's a pretty common disorder. It's complicated genetics. I mean, I have 5 children, for instance. 4 have allergies. My wife does not have allergies, so 80% of my children ended up with dad's malady, if you will. Other families, not so commonly, but it runs in families as genetics. As far as exposures, there's some evidence that air pollution and being in a clean environment actually is a problem. Kids who grow up on farms are actually less likely to have allergies, interestingly enough. We think we're almost too clean sometimes in our way we keep our homes and that. Central air conditioning, I mean, things have changed over generations, but there's still a very common disorder, and a lot of treatment options are available for people.
My wife grew up on a wheat ranch, but she has hay fever. No kidding. She has terrible allergies, but she grew up on a wheat ranch. So she grew up in a very dusty area up in the Mansfield
area. That didn't work out for her so well, did it?
Yeah, but is that probably just genetic?
Well, there's like I said, it's genetic factors, but also exposures. I saw a patient today, for instance, saw a mother and a son in the office. They're both allergic to trees. Mom's allergic to grass and weeds also, and it makes you kind of wonder. I see people who are allergic to trees and weeds, but not grass, and you think, well, We have a very long grass season here locally from April to August, and it always amazes me that if you're going to be allergic in the spring and in the fall, what happens in the middle when the grass is pollinating? Why don't you develop an allergy to that? So there's a lot of unknowns as well.
So I get this thing where if I eat too many tomatoes, my earlobe actually seems to kind of separate a little bit back away from the side of my head. I get like a little, like a little paper cut. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Well, that's a little more unusual, but there are a lot of people, like I say, 5% of people have food allergies, and food allergies are often, can be very serious, very life, and can be life-threatening. People can die from nut allergies, peanut allergies, fish allergies. There's a lot of people who have eczema that's triggered by their allergies. There's other people who have what we call an oral allergy syndrome. Oral means mouth, and people who are allergic to pollen have allergic rhinitis or hay fever. Many people will have an itchy mouth with many of the fruits, raw fruits and vegetables will cause problems with an itchy mouth and throat. If you cook the apple, for instance, that you might have an itchy mouth to, you can eat the apple that's cooked because it changes the protein structure when you heat it up and stuff. So there's a whole variety of things that happen with foods. Not as common as with pollens, and venom is less common than that, but there's some allergies that happen, of course, with foods.
So some people have severe reactions to a bee sting. Is it an allergic reaction, or are they just more sensitive?
No, that would be an allergic reaction. And if people who have had a severe reaction to venom stings, honeybee, yellow jacket, hornets, they should really see an allergist. There's the treatment for venom allergy is if we knew you're never going to be stung again ever in your entire life if you had a severe reaction, then we wouldn't have to do anything. But the risk if you get stung again is about 65% for having a severe reaction. And, of course, there are reported fatalities from venom stings. I've known of, four or five over the last few years here in our local area, Okanagan County and Grant County, for instance. I've had some fatalities from patients I've heard of. That I had not seen but had been stung. So venom allergy can be very serious and should prompt a quick evaluation by me in allergy. And the treatment actually is to give you venom shots, believe it or not. But by desensitization, which is one of our primary treatments for allergy, is to make you less sensitive, less allergic, and it works very well. And it reduces the risk for venom, for instance, from 65% down to about 5% or less.
We're talking to Dr. Brad Cromar from Confluence Health. He's kind of the allergy guy, but there's other allergists at Confluence?
Well, Dr. Dunham does, she's an ear, nose, and throat doctor, and she does some work with allergies. My specialty is a medical doctor of allergy, so I specialize in board-certified in allergy immunology. I'm the only board-certified allergy immunology doctor in the area.
So you mentioned the treatment for some of these allergies is sort of desensitization. Yeah, that's a tricky one. Are there things that that parents can do to kind of make their kids less allergic to things? Any guidelines there?
Well, that's actually a very interesting topic, actually, and that would prompt a more serious, significant discussion. But they've observed, for instance, with peanut allergy. In the United States, North America, there's about a 2% risk for developing a peanut allergy. And they have observed over the years that early introduction of peanut actually prevents allergy. Now, when I say early introduction of peanut, that's something that should be discussed with your child's physician. The risk factors for developing peanut allergy is eczema, severe eczema, and egg allergy. And actually, kids with eczema often will develop an egg allergy. So some patients, you can prevent the development of peanut allergy by early introduction of peanut into the diet. But that is something that I can't advise on the radio right to anybody, and I hope no one would take that as advice just to feed your child peanut. But there is good evidence that early introduction of peanut in your child's diet before the first year can be very beneficial and prevent the development of peanut allergy in many patients.
Boy, a long time ago, of course, before we were really, I guess, woke, I guess is a little bit of the modern-day term, it was so common. It was a kid's birthday. We'd bring the cupcakes. We'd bring this, that, or the other, the treats to school, and, the classmates would celebrate. And Then we became so aware that youngsters have allergies. That is a thing of the past. Now we don't see that anymore.
There are certainly kids, and I have lots of children who are allergic to many foods. But I'm just as an example, you know, it's very interesting to me as far as preventative. Having animals in your home, you know, if you're allergic to cats, you wonder where you get the exposure if you're not in your home. But on the other hand, then there's someone like me who's never owned a cat who is allergic to cats. So there's just a lot of factors. But when you asked about preventative things, one thing that many people are aware of, and as I talk to a lot of parents of young children, many people are aware of the idea of early introduction of peanuts into the diet. Again, just caution that there needs to be a discussion and consideration, because you don't want to put your child at risk, but as a preventative, a few years ago we say, well, don't eat peanuts and you'll be less likely to develop allergy, but the fact has actually been quite clearly presented otherwise and proven through study that early introduction may actually be beneficial.
Well, I was just going to say, the warnings to parents, you can't bring those kinds of things to school. You go through a fast food lane, there's a little sticker that say, well, we do prepare some things here. Yeah. You just see lots of warnings and awareness of that now.
There are a lot of warnings and better labeling. We can always do better. And people also need to be aware that if someone is severely allergic to food, a nut, a fish, shellfish, that is an allergy. It can be very serious and can be fatal for some people. It needs to be taken very seriously. And we do have better labeling and warnings, but it's something to always we can keep track of better and be aware of.
Do children grow out of any sort of allergy, particularly to food allergies? Can they grow out of it?
Yes, about 80% of the time you can outgrow your egg and milk allergy, for instance, but only 20% of the time can you outgrow a peanut allergy. So if we can prevent peanut allergy, that would be a very good thing for people, because it's very devastating. As an example, I saw a patient recently who was allergic to avocado and mango. Now, avocado and mango are easily identifiable foods that you could see. You're not going to have it mixed with things, but things like peanut can be mixed with foods very commonly, desserts. Some people use it in ways that you wouldn't imagine in their food preparation. And so it can be hidden. So hidden allergies can be a problem. And then people need to be aware and not just eat something that they don't know. If you have a nut allergy, you shouldn't just eat a cookie that's handed to you, because you just don't know. And sometimes the person who gives you the cookie doesn't know either that there's a nut in there. They just have a cookie to offer you. So those are some things to think about.
To those of us that don't have any sorts of food allergies, could you kind of give us a sense of what's it like for particularly a youngster who has to avoid some of these very tempting treats that are out there? How hard is that? I think of myself as a youngster and seeing all the other kids enjoying something. That can be rough. I mean, I would think of it for myself if I couldn't enjoy chocolate. That would be a rough thing to have to give up some of these things.
There are some difficulties there. Imagine every time you go to a store, every time you go to a bakery, every time you go to an event, you go to a gathering, a function, always being concerned. I mean, a family who deals with peanut allergy for a child, the whole family deals with the issue. Often it requires modification at home, and the parents and caregivers are very cognizant, and it's very aware, and it's very time-consuming to shop, as you have to look at every label every time, because a processing, is it processed at a plant that also processes peanuts? Are there peanuts contained in the product? It is very challenging, and my heart really goes out to families. So that's why I think that in the instance of peanut, for instance, it'd be very nice if we could have discussions with our providers, and I've talked to many of my physician colleagues, and a lot of parents are aware that this peanut issue might be something that we can get ahead of for many people and not have to worry about it as much. Because once you develop the allergy, you have it for life.
And this, those that just have no gluten tolerance at all, they develop, what is it, celiac disease, I think?
Yeah. There's a disease called celiac disease. That's a little different process. It's an autoimmune process. Gluten in foods triggers a IgA-type antibody response in the body, which in response to ingestion of gluten, you make the antibody, then the antibody damages the lining of the intestines and can give a skin rash. So that can be, and that requires avoidance of gluten in the diet. And that's a little different process. It's not the same kind of allergy per se than to peanut or to yellow jackets or to pollen grains, but it's an allergic type process, an autoimmune process that develops.
Boy, and there seems like there's gluten in everything these days.
Well, actually, there is and there isn't. The labeling is very good, and there's very many products now available that are labeled. And I see it even. I don't have a problem with gluten. I have a problem with eating too much and not exercising enough. But as far as gluten, when I read the labels, it often labels it gluten-free. And I think there's a lot of products that are available. And manufacturers have done a very good job in improving that for people.
Yeah, they've really picked up on that. Well, why don't we have you back in a few weeks, and we'll take some calls. We'll have you on maybe for the full program, and we can open up the phone lines, and you can do what you can in terms of answering people's questions. How about that?
I'd love to do that. Thank you very much, and thanks for having me today.
You bet. We're at moderate right now on the trees. Then we'll move more into the grass and maybe the weed pollens.
The weed season as we move forward into the summer.
Okay. Dr. Brad Cromar from Confluence Health today on the agenda. We're going to talk about the issue of vacation rentals, and commissioners say there's a lot of complaints. We'll talk with the folks who are the short-term vacation rental professionals. They're next on the agenda.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ, KPQ.com, and streaming on Alexa or the KPQ mobile app.
Okay, as the program rolls on today, want to let you know that the Chelan County Commissioners have started a process to regulate vacation rentals, where they say there have been some complaints from neighbors in some of the unincorporated areas of Chelan County. In fact, last week we had Chelan County Commissioner Bob Bugert on, and while we were in the conversation, he had mentioned that the Chelan County Vacation Rental Professionals Group had approached the board with some ideas on how the industry could self-regulate. Well, we've got some of those folks. Let me slide my microphone over here so I can get a little better glimpse of one of the board members from the Short-Term Rental Alliance, Zelda Holgate, and also we have vice chair of the group this year, Sean Lynn. And so thank you both for joining us today. Welcome to the program. How's business, I should start off with?
Thanks, Dave, for having us and giving us the time to speak. Great. It's going to be a great summer. Things are ramping up. And we're getting ready for a great summer.
What's not to like about coming to vacation in Washington's playground? And so explain a little bit about your group. You work with folks that have some property here that folks like to make available to, you know, folks maybe from all over the country, probably some West Siders that want to get over here into the sunshine. So, Sean or Zelda, explain a little bit about your organization, the Short-Term Rental Alliance.
Yeah. Thanks again, Dave, for having us here. It's really, really great to be able to talk with you. We are members of this alliance that kind of formed up. We were part of that organization that we're meeting informally, that Short-Term Rental Managers Group, and we were kind of meeting informally to discuss issues with commissioners directly and that are out there in our communities and how work with them on how to resolve those issues. And then there were some issues that were going on our side that we were seeing where we kind of felt like we needed to kind of form this alliance to have a stronger voice and bring more of our group in so that we can really discuss this with the commissioners and discuss this with community development and be part of this process of how to resolve some of the STR issues that are out there.
So these are places that may or may not be on like Airbnb or just people that maybe just like to kind of handle that part on their own. But these are places that have their home or a cabin up for, as the name implies, like a short term, you know, maybe for a weekend or, you know, maybe a week or something during the, well, it could be year round.
Right. So the organization is, or the alliance is made up of single individual vacation rental owners and property managed vacation rentals.
Understand. So when did you first hear about the commissioners wanted to take a look at some of the complaints they say they're getting that merit a look at some sort of regulations? And and so when did you hear about this, and what have you discussed with them so far?
In 2004, there was some rumblings about regulating vacation rentals. And so we as an organization at that time, the Chelan County professionals, came together and said that we would like to self-regulate and that we could do this. They couldn't really verify any of the issues at that time. And then it went kind of by the wayside, and we were able to do our self-regulation, put our organization into play. About 2 years ago, we started hearing some rumblings, and so in 2017, we worked very hard on putting together a cooperative approach for the Chelan County to work with the county commissioners, and we presented that to each commissioner in 2018, and then just on May 21st of this month, we presented it to the three county commissioners together.
So what kinds of self-regulation have you proposed? What kinds of things would you expect of folks that are in your group that, hey, if you're going to make yourself your place available for rent, this is the type of behavior that you would expect of a tenant renting your place?
Yeah, we would, we would expect that members of our group have their guests be responsible to their neighbors and when they're staying, and definitely have good guest policies in place that help facilitate that. I think one of the things that we've really been talking about with the commissioners is trying to identify what the actual issues are, and what we hear are noise, parking, and garbage repeatedly, and yet it seems like it's coming from, maybe not everybody in the county, but maybe a few neighbors in areas that are maybe possibly next to a bad operator or just, not happy with the vacation rental aspect going on in their communities. And we sat down and we thought, well, how can we resolve that issue? And what would, regulations look like to resolve that issue? And what we came up with was that, having a responsible party form, would be a great way to do it, so that the neighbors of a vacation rental had somebody to communicate with and to talk to. And if there was an issue with, say, late night noise in a hot tub, that they could call up somebody during that night or the next day and say, hey, listen, your guests are being pretty noisy and the sound just funnels right to us. Can we resolve this somehow? So I think we just want to be good neighbors, and that responsible party form was one way to do that as a group.
Where did that idea go? Was there any follow-up? What's happened with that idea?
I don't think so far we've seen anything within our within community development or the commissioners. Actually, they all think that it's a great idea. It's a great idea. And actually, we had a house bill that passed just this last few months ago that actually brings up exactly that idea of a contact person that would be associated with a vacation rental. Or short-term rental is what we're kind of calling them, because not all people use these as vacation rentals. Some people are using them for business purposes and different ideas, too. These aren't people just on vacation. But I think that we would go one step further, and we would say as a professional group that, let's make sure that contact person is somebody that the neighbors can actually communicate with, so that civil issues or civil or any issues can be resolved in a friendly manner rather than through police departments.
How many complaints do you think there have been? Have you been able to determine that?
We have asked the county to give us some information on that. We have not been able to get any definitive answers. But in regards to that responsible person form, we also want it to be for every resident in Chelan County, so that there's no differentiation between a short-term rental, a long-term rental, or a resident. It's a responsible person form. And that can help. We've talked with Sheriff Burnett. That can help the Sheriff's Department in case of fire emergency or evacuation. So we don't want to set the short-term rental residential piece apart from just regular residential.
So what is your biggest fear, I guess, of that there be a sort of a vacation rental regulation? One bad apple spoils the whole bunch, sort of a thing?
I think so. On their presentation on 6-4 at the first commissioner's meeting to actually discuss this, they came up with, CCCD came up with 17 different possible codes and changes to what we already have there on the books to identify the, or to regulate these issues in some way, shape, or form. I think when you say biggest fear, I think that that permitting is an interesting one, because that might possibly give your neighbor the right to shut you down if they just simply don't like vacation rentals, and that the county would then just pull your permit because of a three strikes rule or something along those lines. So definitely, I think permitting is something that we in the industry feel is not even necessary due to the kind of self-regulating nature of the industry. The review processes that are on VRBO and Airbnb are rigid. And, boy, you have to stick to certain requirements or your guests are going to let you know about it. And that's going to affect your occupancy and your rates that you can ask, or even your right to rent, possibly. Airbnb could even pull you off if you're not doing a good job.
What does it take right now to begin having short-term rentals on your property in terms of permitting through the county? If you're just, you have to have the right zoning, what's that process like?
Well, I think it's the, I don't believe there is a zoning without, in the UGA or unincorporated areas. I think that certain cities have zoning issues, but in my instance, it's a business license and we pay our taxes, we pay the lodging tax. And operating as a property manager, I operate it as a business and try to be just a great neighbor to my neighbors in Plain.
So I understand right now that they are looking at this only for the unincorporated areas of the county, this set of proposals. How would you describe the nature of relationships between vacation rental properties in the short-term alliance and the neighbors that exist around properties that are a part of your alliance? Good? Excellent? How would you characterize it?
Well, I think that 95% of us have an excellent relationship with our neighbors, but I do think that there's those outliers, and there are codes already on the books that could be enforced to ensure that those people are held accountable to running a good business. I know that I wouldn't want to be next to a noisy vacation rental, but if I was, I know the ordinance and I know who to call, and I would have it taken care of.
Do you have any rules already in place with your alliance, or is it not that rigid of a structure at this point to say, hey, you're in our group, we've heard some complaints, so are you already doing some self-policing at this point, Sean?
Prior to the Alliance was actually just formed a little more than 3 weeks ago, so it's fairly new. However, it's the core members of that have been discussing these issues for the last couple of years. Yes, we have. We actually have reached out to folks. In fact, just this weekend I was having a conversation with a person that has a vacation rental with that hot tub issue of the acoustics driving there, and I said, boy, I tell you what, have you talked to that owner? And I don't know who they are, and I said, let me know an address, and I'll gladly figure out this information and let them know that there's an issue, because I think that we all want to be good neighbors. And I'm a little bit unique with our business, because we actually work directly with people that are renting out their homes, and we service the homes from a cleaning standpoint and a turnover standpoint dealing with issues. So the owner in Seattle is doing the booking, but we're the on-the-ground game person. So we get those calls at night if there is an issue, which are rare and really not out there. And I think that it's important that we all really, you know, we need to communicate. That's the biggest thing that we keep saying over and over again to our commissioners. And the commissioners are hearing us. I think they're hearing us loud and clear that they understand that that's a big part of this issue, too, and how do we solve this.
All righty. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with some of our final thoughts from Sean Lynn and Zelda Holgate there with the Short-Term Rental Alliance, and a very important cog in this whole vacation rental business. It's a big business here and an important part of our tourism economy here in North Central Washington. On the Agenda.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ, KPQ.com, and streaming on Alexa or the KPQ mobile app.
Okay, we are talking with members of the Short-Term Rental Alliance who are saying we want a seat at the table as Chelan County commissioners begin a process to perhaps regulate vacation rentals in the unincorporated parts of the county. So far what's happened is there has been one kind of a public workshop, public session. They're actually going to have another one next Tuesday, you understand, Zelda?
Right, June 18th. They haven't determined a location, but I believe it's at 1:30.
Okay. A public hearing where the public, your group, certainly neighbors who you've heard have been raising complaints could comment. That'll be, I think, July 24th. But at this point, your organization says we want to see some real statistics so we can really get the magnitude of where this problem lies. Correct, Sean?
Yeah, that's correct. We'd love to see some real data. Our own internal data shows, you know, the number of complaints per rentals annually are so low. My own personal data, we're at less than 0.5% of actual calls coming in per the bookings that are there. And I think that that's common throughout the actual vacation rental industry here. And we'd like to see some real data from the Sheriff's Department, from what complaints are coming into our commissioners and community development.
How many, I guess your alliance was just kind of formed here in the last month or so. About how many members do you have?
Yeah, we're, at last count, I think we just broke 50 members. But the biggest thing is these members are also a lot of property managers. So we're representing over 600 properties in Chelan County. And that's a great number. We're really excited about that. And we really like that we can get together as one group and speak. So that we're all on the same page saying the same message, and that is we want to be good neighbors, and how do we make this all work together in this tourism-driven economy that we're in here?
That's I wasn't trying to do the math in my head because I couldn't do the math in my head, but that is of significant impact here to our tourism economy. And we want to make sure everyone's having a good experience. We want to make sure that the people that are living next door to these vacation properties are enjoying and maintaining a good neighborly relationship. Zelda, your final thought.
Well, I wanted to invite anybody that supports short-term rentals to our meeting on June 22nd at 10 o'clock a.m. at the PUD in Leavenworth. We're hoping to increase our membership numbers and to elect an executive board because we are so new. And again, we just want to be good neighbors. We want a seat at the table with the commissioners to figure out how to do that.
Sean, final thought from you as well on this issue.
Yeah, you know, it's been really great on this process on talking to the commissioners. I actually am getting right in there and sitting in meetings and having communications with them and talking to our neighbors as well. I think I was going to reach out to the Friends of Leavenworth community to see if they'd want me to go speak or some of our representatives to go speak. We really have a drive to work together on this issue, and I don't think that regulations are the way to go in this. I think that our orchardists around here would agree that regulations, you know, maybe aren't the way to solve problems sometimes. So we'd love to sit down and talk about these issues before we regulate.
All right. Do you have any kind of a Facebook page or a website or anything like that at this point? Maybe Facebook at this juncture in the game?
Both. The website, the Facebook page can be linked right there on the website. And things are moving at such a fast rate, Dave. It's just like lightning trying to get all this infrastructure in place. The website is www.stracwa.org.
All right. Thanks you both for joining us today. We appreciate it. Zelda Holgate and Sean Lynn with the Short-Term Rental Alliance.